Mind over matter. Overcompensating. Overstatements. Crookedness relating. The soul's churn in return. Mental overstimulation. One word. Riveting. It tethers my pilot. Streams that are promised to make seeking less.
Have you already started it? There it is.
Ah, it's nice. Okay, that was just the permission.
Okay. Got it.
All right. Alan Paul, thanks so much for giving me some of your time, and it's great to have you on. I've been looking forward to this, having a proper conversation, finally. Welcome to Poetry Journal Podcast. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing awesome, Alex. Thanks for having me on the show. Looking forward to a great conversation, sir.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Let's start from the top. Jazz musician. Could you just tell us a little bit? Because, you know, I want you to just kind of give us a little detail of, like, your experience with jazz and, you know, what it means to you, you know?
That's a great question. Thanks for, you know, starting with, you know, one of my passions, one of my loves is music. I always start my interviews and let people know that, you know, before I'm a musician, a jazz musician, I'm a husband, I'm a father, I'm a creative, and I'm forgiven. So that's like my first thing, is always to give people the whole picture that, you know, family comes first in my life. But then secondly, comes, you know, my music, my creative life. And so as a jazz musician, I started as a classical musician, actually, growing up in Pensacola, Florida, here in the States. My mom was a piano teacher, so started that way. And, you know, eventually got to jazz when I heard for the first time this guy named Miles Davis. Don't know if you heard of him, but heard Miles Davis as a teenager. And totally changed my world. Wanted to hear everything he played, and then all the musicians that were a part of his world, which of course opened me up to all these other greats, the Coltranes and the Charlie Parkers and the Bud Powells and the Herbie Hancocks. I could just go on and on and on with all these jazz musicians that I immediately became my heroes. Yeah. So yeah, overall, I just became enamored of this genre that allows you to do whatever, but not whatever, I shouldn't say it like that. It's a very specific discipline. Yeah. That gives you a world of, like, creative outlets, you know, so many different things between African and the New Orleans style and the Chicago style and New York. There's so many eras, so many things that I could just dig into. So yeah, now I do that professionally, and I play piano, you know, not always jazz, but as much jazz as I possibly can. Yeah, that's kind of like how it's evolved.
That's amazing, man. That's amazing. And I can sense the passion in your voice when you speak about it. Not only that, but it's like when I hear you speak, I was just thinking about jazz in general. I think there's so much richness to it, and I think maybe that speaks to where it kind of leads to so many different craftsmanship when it comes to art. Do you get what I mean? Where it's so multidimensional in terms of, like, the different facets it encapsulates. And so, as a person, or like as a musician, to begin with, it kind of, there's so many gateway different artistry that you can kind of take and kind of veer out from your own comfort zone, in a sense. Mm. I think that's amazing, man. That's amazing. But also, it sounds like you actually have music in your lineage. Like you mentioned your mother, and I'm sure, you know, she has, well, I'm sure there's more to that than just your mother, where there's music down the pipeline of your lineage, in a sense, if you get what I mean.
That's actually interesting you picked up on that. It's yes and no, right? So yeah. I don't have any of the professional musicians necessarily in my family, going back to my mom, my dad, grandmother, but yeah. It definitely is a part of our, like, family culture. My grandmother, my mother's mother, was the one that insisted that her and her two sisters, my aunts, all learn piano. So my grandmother wasn't a pianist, she wasn't a musician, but she's like, you guys are gonna learn piano. So now my aunt up in New Jersey plays for her church still. My mom still plays for her church. You know, everybody sings when we get together. So it was definitely a part of the fabric. Okay. And again, my mom became a music teacher. So you can see that's where it kind of like really got serious for me because I saw it day to day playing in church choirs and things like that. So yes, it definitely is a part of the fabric, but not, I was the first professional musician in my family where I decided, hey, this is going to be like my living, you know, but definitely came from, like you said, that I think there was a sense of culture and artistry and being creative that came through the lineage and making your own way and being someone that made an impact in the world. So if it was music or arts or for a lot of my family, you know, I have doctors in my family, you know, all these kind of people, but they're all very independent thinkers. That's the best way I could put it, right? So that kind of thought process, I think, definitely pushed me on the path toward, you know, being a creative artist, you know, in my own way.
You know, you said something just now. I was going to move on, but you said something that triggers something. You said independent thinkers, and I've kind of come to this opinion where, or this point in my life where, especially as an artist, independent thinking is almost like a rite of passage, you know, being a great artist. And I find sometimes it seems, maybe it's just me, that it's few and far in between out there where there's so many people that actually think for themselves and create as such. What do you think?
That's a big topic, man, especially in this day of social media and artists trying to make a name for themselves, right? Like one of my other passions is currently is in my own podcast where, you know, I talk to creatives that are, you know, in the faith space that are Christian, and they're really no different than any other artist. We're all trying to make our way, right? So I'm basically talking to people who are like, I have this passion, but you know, so and so has this many followers, and so and so is doing this, and so and so is on this movie or whatever. And it's the comparison, right? So independent thinking and being willing to step out and say, okay, I don't care how many likes I get, I don't care how many people come to the show, this is what I'm going to create. This is the way I'm going to express myself. It's super hard because I don't think, and this might be me just going back to kind of like you mentioned the jazz and some of my heroes. And I'm sure in your artist, you know, in your field and poetry and stuff, I'm sure there's people that you looked at. I don't know if they probably had similar struggles as we do now, back then. I don't know how they would have handled social media. I don't know, you know what I mean? I don't know if they, I mean, they just, I maybe there was a just as much competition. I don't know. But it feels like it's much harder with what you just said, is to stay unique, is to be focused on what you do. And yes, same thing me as an artist. I'm really, it's really hard to not look over your shoulder and say, well, such and such has, you know, this song and, you know, they did this with it. And maybe I should do more like that. And it's okay to be influenced. It's okay to have great influences and inspired, but imitation is where you draw the line, right? It's okay to be inspired, but if you're stuck in imitation, I'm not talking about when you're learning, but once you like become, you know what I mean? I think that's where, yeah, it gets tough. So I would agree with you. Like, it's more important than ever to be independent in terms of your artistry, in terms of whatever you do, but especially if we're talking to artists, like, don't spend time, you know, worrying about what other people are doing because they're doing the same thing, probably looking at you.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's a very peculiar thing to me because I think, as you said, we live in such a copycat society. And when you're thinking about, you know, just being a professional across the board, different industries, everybody's trying to do what works, and ultimately, sometimes you end up being, there's a commonality where we're all trying to do the same thing because this is pretty much the template that makes money. And so you end up in a situation where, you know, more times than not, you kind of lose your voice, or there's a risk of you losing that personality or that spark that separates you from the crowd. And of course, you know, that's a shame. And you know, to speak to what you mentioned, sometimes I've been kind of trying to rationalize this idea in my head. And it's pretty much the idea of like going to school for like creative, for being a creative. And now you know how to do it the right way, right? You know how to do it with the rules intact, et cetera, et cetera. But what about your voice? Like, because to an extent, it's almost like you become like everybody else, because everybody else are trying to do the same thing. They're trying to follow the same rules you were trying to follow. Now, that it takes discipline, but if you can stay in this premise and have your voice intact, however, you have to remember, going into school, you're at this age where you most likely haven't garnered or grasped your voice yet. So before you kind of know who you are and have a voice, that individuality about yourself, you're being put into this space where everybody, you're pretty much a replication of everybody else. So how does that work? Do you get what I mean? It's a little bit paradoxical.
It's a tough man. It absolutely is a paradox. And I love that you're there, because kind of give you just a tiny bit of background on me so you kind of see where my perspective comes on this.
Yeah.
For the first, I went to school for University of Miami in exactly what you're saying, you know, into jazz school, but I went for music education.
Yeah.
So I was right there in the academic, you know, getting my degree, learning how to teach, being taught how to teach, right?
Yeah.
And then also, of course, doing my jazz degree as my kind of like my minor, as my consecration, so concentration. So I'm in this academic world, and then as soon as I get out, I went straight into teaching elementary school here in the States. So
yeah.
I didn't begin performing professionally. I was an educator for 8 years straight up in the public school system. And so you say putting in the lines and the box, I was teaching students all the time, standardized testing and all this other stuff. Meanwhile, I'm a music teacher, and yes, I'm trying to show them the artistic side,
yeah,
of how to be a person. And so I was constantly battling that. I was battling it in my own life as an artist, right? Like you just talked about trying to get your own voice. And yep, then I'm teaching other kids and students and piano students, hey, you have to learn the basics. Like you said, there's, yeah, certain things you have to learn. 2 + 2 = 4 if you're going to be any kind of mathematician. You can't bend the rules.
Yes.
And there's certain rules in music. You can't necessarily start without learning the basics and the standards and the structures. But like you said, a lot of times I think we get into that place where we lock people in, mm, to just the rules. And music and creativity is not bound by rules. It's informed by the rules.
Yes.
It allows you to have a canvas to paint on, but then doesn't tell you what to put inside the canvas. And so it gives you the borders. And so one guy I interviewed recently is really good at explaining this. I think he called it the sandbox. The creative place is the sandbox. So you can play with ideas, you can build them up and knock them back down, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you still have a place where you can kind of play around and make things, and it can be messy. So you don't necessarily have the rules, but you still got to be inside the sandbox.
That's right.
You got to have the tools, right? You, mm-hmm, still got to have the thing. So it's that balance of, yes, you need the tools. Yes, you need to academic is good. I am very much, again, like that's why I mentioned I'm a teacher first.
Yes.
So I believe in the structure. I believe structure allows you to have the freedom, because once you know what to do with these structures, you can break rules. You can bend things.
There you go.
But yeah, I definitely feel, I feel you on the academic piece, where there's a lot of academic things in terms of jazz, or you can even name, I don't know, art, many, many arts where I think we codify it too much. We turn it into the masters do XYZ. So that means if you're not doing XYZ, you don't get the grant, or you don't get the scholarship, or you don't get the opportunity. Meanwhile, every single innovator we know broke all the rules, and that's why they became innovators. So yeah, I love the conversation, man. It's definitely, I think every person has to walk that line and say, okay, yeah, you know, I wish there was like a magic bullet to tell everybody, like, yeah, do this.
Yeah, it's true.
This much structure, this much academic, this much, and then this much break the rules, follow your own path. It's a combination of the two, right? Just like everything. Like, there's no one size fits all. But it definitely can't be one or the other. You can't be on either extreme. Yeah.
That's right. And what you're saying, I think, in my head, what came to mind was organized chaos, in a sense. It's almost like, yeah, we're gonna go crazy, but to go even more into it, it's almost like you have emotions tethered by logic. It's pretty much a similar thing where, you know, emotions is so unpredictable. But if it has something to kind of almost give it a fine line to tune it, logic would be the next best thing, wouldn't it?
Yes.
Give that balance that we're looking for.
Yeah, there has to be balance. It's funny that you're just saying that, and literally popped into my head because my membership that I do for, again, I'm mentioning my group for Christian creatives, is God and Gigs. So I've referenced this because it's the first thing that pops into my head. Since we go to conversations like this, these are the kind of conversations I have in my membership all the time. So I call that group God and Gigs 360. And here's why, is why it popped up. Because we do a lot of discussions about what I call being the integrated creative. So the integrated creative, a lot of times we talk about like what you just said. Well, what's the emotional? What's the spiritual? I want to express myself. But then there's the practical. I got to make a living. I got to pay the bills. This client just wants this type of song. He doesn't want this kind of song. He doesn't want this artwork. He wants this artwork. So I got to just do, like you said, kind of stay in the box, right? Because I have a great example. Jazz artist I worked with recently. She told me at one of the gigs that we do the 40s, 1940s and 50s, very classic jazz. We're talking Billie Holiday, Louis Armstrong, you know, very much in that period. She has the flower in her hair. She does the whole thing, the same mic. She does the whole, it's a picture of the 1940s. Yeah. So during one of my solos, she leaned over to me. She's like, okay, remember, our audience is just here for, you know, and she was kind of telling me like, stop going so far into like my creative bag.
Yeah.
And it hurt a little bit. It hurt. It was like, really?
I ain't gonna lie, it would hurt me too.
Yeah, but she was right. That particular audience and those listeners needed to hear just what they expected from that genre. Yeah. And so for me to go outside of that as creative, I wasn't the place for it. Right. So it's that integrated understanding, like, yeah, right now this is kind of like a business. Right now I need to give the product the way the product is. This is not my place to kind of go all, like you said, crazy, organized chaos, right?
Yeah.
So it's organized in that I know when to use it and when not to use it. I know when I can be totally free. And the whole point of the integrated creative, again, is that it's still me. I'm not less creative because I decided at this point to just give them what they're asking for. It doesn't make me like a sellout. It doesn't make me, you know what I mean? So that's why I love this topic. Cause yeah, this is where a lot of us live. It's in that tension of, yeah, I'm an artist. Yeah, I want to be creative. Yeah, I have my unique voice.
Yeah.
But I also got to follow the rules over here and just make sure that I'm respectful of.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. So it's, yeah, I love that conversation, man. I love the fact we're talking about this.
Man, I have a whole thing I wanted to really ask, but we're just stuck on like just the beginning at the moment. I'm just like, but at the same time,
hey, flows is where it's flowing.
You know, you give me certain answers. I'm just like, oh my God, I need to ask this. I got to touch on this. But to what you're saying, it resonates with me because I'm thinking to myself, you know, they have this saying where it's almost like there's freedom in discipline. And I think to an extent, that's pretty much what you're speaking on, where time and a place, you know, there's a time and a place for everything. You can't do it all at one time. So you have to choose your moments and you have to choose it wisely. It's got to make sense at the time that you choose it. And so sometimes it's just pretty much just understanding where you're at, your surrounding, your terrain, and just picking and choosing. But the awareness to know exactly what to do and when to do it, you know, because we can't 100%. You know, if you're in an audience, somebody's not going to get what you have to say. but for the most part, you want the majority to at least understand. You know, you're not trying to alienate people at the same time. So, you know, because I'm sure you're at this place where eventually as an artist, you get to a place where you actually want to give back, because this craft that you've been in, it's pretty much served you so well, and you want people to almost understand or get the feeling or experience what you've experienced. And you can't really do that unless you have the intentions to do right by people and actually give them something, maybe a piece of yourself in a sense, because that's what you're giving with what you're creating, you know? It's a reciprocal type of thing. So you got to be aware of what you're doing, you know. And that's where the servicing, I would imagine, being a pastor, that you know, that's where the servicing comes into play, you know. Service.
not a pastor, but I appreciate the thought. I'm servant, yes. No, that's why we're stuck here, because you're absolutely speaking my language when you said reciprocal. One of my favorite quotes is by composer George Frideric Handel. He's the writer of the Handel's Messiah, the Hallelujah Chorus. A lot of people know that's the most famous, you know, piece from the Handel's Messiah.
Yes.
And when one of his, I guess, you know, kings or princes or whatever, the people that were attending that actual concert back in, you know, 1700s.
Yes.
They talked to Handel and they're like, oh, this is an amazing piece. It's a beautiful something, something. I was so entertained.
Yes.
And Handel says to him, my Lord, I am so sorry if you were just entertained. I wished to make you better.
Ooh.
And that is the key. That is my theme quote for everything I create in art, everything I have in music. I wish to make the listeners. I'm trying not to use currently, Alex. This is my own little pet peeve.
Yeah.
I'm not even saying the word audience anymore for the people I play for. I try to say community.
Community.
Something reciprocal. That's why your reciprocal word like blew up in my head, because audiences are one way. It's like you and you speak to them, and the very word audience is just to hear, but it's not to respond. And the other, when I looked up audience in the dictionary, it said spectator, which is again just to look, not to interact. And it's like you just said, I want to give back, and like I want this to be an interaction. I want you to respond to the art. I don't want you to just be there like, feed me, feed me, feed me, and then, you know, take my money or something. Like, that's transactional, you know? So what I really am flowing into this kind of just almost a mission or a crusade in a way. Like, I just feel this urge to tell artists, stop trying to think of it as an audience. They're not like a monolith. It's not like this block of corporate, you know, customers that you're supposed to just get as much out of that you can, and collect as many of them that you can, and hoard them like a little, you know, Scrooge McDuck, like when they're like swimming in the audience, like, oh yeah, I got so many of them. Like, that's not the right picture, man. And I love the fact that you said that you want to give back to them, and it's like, let me serve you, and if I get value out, if I give you value, then I can expect value back. But it'll be oh gosh, you got me going. What's the word? It won't be forced. It'll be granted, right?
Organic.
You the success and all the money or whatever else you need from them, it'll be something that they want to do, you know.
Yes, that's right. It won't be you know, like the snake oil salesman where, you know, he takes. And now you feel you're all.
Yeah, you feel cheated. Yeah.
Yeah, you feel cheated.
Yeah, exactly.
You want your money back, but it's too late. You know, it's just like no refunds.
Exactly. And you know what's so interesting about that is that the nature of what we do is, in a sense, I saw this in somebody's blog, that for McDonald's or whatever else, you know, you go to a restaurant or whatever, you know, at least these places, you pay first and then you get the product.
Yes.
In this case, you know, a lot of times we put it out first and then we wait.
And then
and then it's like later, you know, so it's like this kind of, all right, well, are they going to like it? Are they, you know, and you have to, like you said, you have to change their mentality. You can't just go in thinking, what can I get from this? What are they going to give me if I say this or if I play this? What are they going to give me? What are they going to give me? What are they going to give me? You have to change it to, hey, if it was free, it's free. You got it. But now it's on you to respond. And so it's just a different mentality, man. But yeah, it's definitely I wish I had the answer. Like I said, I think the answer's in the conversations. The more we talk about it, the more people figure it out.
Definitely. You mentioned your podcast earlier, and why don't you just tell my audience about your podcast?
I'm sure
they want to check you out.
Thank you. Yeah, my podcast is called The God and Gigs Show, GodAndGigs, so gigs. And basically it came out of what I just described back when I was coming out of school, and then I went to education, as I mentioned. And then I went into full-time ministry. You mentioned that, you know, I'm not a pastor, but I do work in a church, right?
Oh, okay.
So I was working in a church, and at some point I was like, oh my gosh, like I'm feeling an urge to step out and do something different, but I didn't know what to do with myself because I hadn't been a professional musician at all after leaving school.
Yeah.
And so what happened was I get back into the gigging world and had no idea how to incorporate my beliefs in some people, and unfortunately in some churches and Christian things that you know that it's bad to play music outside of church. So I decided to talk to people who do it, who works inside this world of church and ministry, or maybe Christian art or whatever, but they also work in the mainstream. They're just like you and me, right? They're just playing, singing, creating, doing poetry, whatever.
Yeah.
And that's where the podcast came from. It came from people who are trying to be the creatives that God created them to be and never sacrifice their faith while they're pursuing the calling that they feel in whatever field it is, art, music, dance, drama, whatever, right?
Right.
So yeah. I talk to those, I interview them. We've had Grammy winners. We've had Emmy winners. But they're people like you and me, and they just happen to have a certain mindset about the world, about how God works. But they're also extremely successful. And I also talk to people that are not doing major things, but they're doing great things in their families. They're keeping their families together. They're actually like, they're not like the crazy starving artist, right? Yes, they're like real people. So that's what the podcast is about. And I've been going on 260 something episodes now. And they can find it on any network, any podcast network. But it's been a joy. Absolutely changed my life becoming a podcaster and talking about these issues.
Congrats, man. It sounds like definitely something people should listen to. I that resonates with me in terms of like just having people that actually want to share their voice. You know, that's the main thing. Just having ideas or like having an experience that you can share with people that's relevant to what you have, the platform that you have. And it's in this sense, we're all about creativity. So whether it's old or young or experienced, I keep an open mind, and I just want people that actually have something to say to be able to try and express themselves, you know, whether it's through, not only through their artistry, but also just put it in layman terms sometimes, because sometimes people just need to hear something. You get what I mean?
100%. I feel like a lot of people, when they hear conversations like this, you might have listeners right now that aren't considering themselves creative, right?
That's right.
And that's a battle I get into a lot. Oh, I'm not a creative. I'm not a professional. And it's like, you know, there's no one more creative than someone that's got $10 left in their account and they gotta make 20. You gotta pay this and pay that. Like, you get creative, like every single one of us.
Yeah.
We all have the ability to be creative. It's just, where are you creative, right? Some people are performing arts. That's where we decide to be creative. I say it a lot of times like this. Somebody in another podcast helped me kind of clarify this because she asked me a similar question.
Yeah.
And I said, creativity is not who I am, it's how I express who I am.
Yes.
Right? So I'm not just a musician. I'm a person that loves my wife, that loves God, that loves family, that loves to like hang out and chill, like a very introverted kind of person, but I still like to, you know, to help other people. I'm very other people minded, right?
That's right. Yeah.
The best way I can express that is by playing music for them. The best way I can express that is by writing a song. The best way I can do what I do is by, so it's like a vehicle. So someone else's vehicle is the best way I can express who I am by fixing this car immaculately, where you didn't think it could run, and all of a sudden this mechanic creatively figures out, oh, it was just da 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 da, and you're like, how did you do that? And creatively, they were able to find a solution to that. And that's the way they express who they are, because they're a thinker and they're a fixer and they're, you know, so creativity is just how you express who you are. It's not like this defining label, like, oh, if you're a creative, you got to write a play or you, like, I think that's, again, unfortunately, YouTube and TikTok and content creator, you know what I mean? Like, it locked us all into this kind of like, oh,
yes, indeed.
You have to be in this label. Yeah, I don't believe in that, man. I think we all are creatives.
In essence, painting yourself into a corner, you know. I have something, let me just read something for you, and we can get back to the conversation. I
sure.
Spoke to you this earlier, but we were on a roll, so I was just like, let's just cook for a little bit.
I like it.
It says, creating matters to me. Artful with the architecture like similes. Some days portrays the monster in me, a savage shade like pictures see. Somehow, some grow to smile with time, while others endure with the grime to show more dirty teeth. Growing a little bit of me in different universe as the verse disperse, as the sonnets reverberates, then rise from the ashes like Thanos. Looking extra great on the side like Grey Hulk. Extra rings on my platter like friction had never mattered, crushing time with a flicker, while my tongue twist begets even slicker. The nitty gritty got me smitten in the catbird seat, waiting on my next treat, born to explode like pardon me. Then courage enough to do it again like how dare me. Thank you.
Nice, man. Oh, that was dope. That was dope. I have to tell you quickly, one of my favorite parts of my career was when I came down here to Miami. I've been living in Miami now 30 years, but right about, I guess, 10, 15 years in, I met a young curator named Ingrid B. She runs On the B Side here in Miami, South Florida, but she's got other spots. Yeah. And the first thing was, my wife started going first to a poetry open mic. And once my wife started going to the poetry open mic, I'm like, what's this thing? I don't know, slam board. I'm not, I don't believe in this stuff. I'm not like listening. Then I ended up playing at a piano bar where she was having open mics, poetry and music. And I anchored that thing for 15 years, accompanying poets, playing behind poets. Now my best friends are spoken word artists. So when I tell you I have an affinity for what you just did and the lines you just dropped and just how, that's what I meant about the integration, right? Like I've never been able to be a writer like that, but I hear the rhythm and the syntax and how the words fit together. It's music to me, you know what I mean?
The
poetry is music to me. I hear it musically. And so for me to put a company, if I was on keys right now, I'd be trying to like find, okay, what's the flow he's going for? How do I accompany this without getting in the way of the words? So yeah, that's what I was doing for, I still do it. I don't get a chance to do it anymore that often, but yeah, poets are like my, there's a, those are my second, that's my, those are my second cousins right there, like the poetry community.
You know, yeah, that to see that resonates with me because like over the years, just performing on stage, I've kind of grown to have so many, to have an affinity to so many different artistry, but a commonality is more the rappers or like the musicians, you know what I mean? Just like the guitarists, you know, so so many different genres. And with me, it's like I'm almost like the extreme of both sides. So logic and then emotion on the other side. And somehow I'm able to kind of paste them both together, put them both together, bring a bit of balance, which kind of depicts sometimes how I write. But when I listen to music or just the sounds, it speaks to me, but it's more of an emotional type of language. You know, it's a frequency and you have to kind of know how to tap into it, or maybe it taps into you, who knows?
Yeah, it's always a back and forth thing, man. That's what's so crazy, what you just described is, and it is hard to explain. And I think that's the point. Like, if you try to literally try to put this process into words of how, you know, left brain, right? People talk about all the, oh, I'm analytical. You mentioned it, analytical versus the emotional. And it's this amalgamation of all of that that makes your particular voice that you just described, right? So what we're really saying is, and this is getting deep, I didn't realize we were going to go here, man, so I blame you. But what we're, but what we're really saying in a sense, I think, is that your voice, your unique voice, if you don't give room to both, you don't have a unique voice. If you give, I think you said it a little bit earlier, if you lean too much on the emotion, it's not, still not really your voice, because now, like, when somebody ticks you off, you change your voice, and then when you're happy, you change your voice. But when you have it connected with this other side, which is, no, I'm listening, I'm receiving, and I'm like more either logical, or I'm listening to other people, and I'm not just like going all my side. So now it's like, oh, like you said, the balance, and now your voice comes out of that, and it's like literal, like, okay, this is there is no formula that could put these two things together to be this one voice.
That's right.
This side and this side, now it's unique.
Now it's unique.
You know what I mean? If you're just going by what society's saying, it's not unique. And if you're just going by logic and what the rules are saying, it's not unique. It's when you put the two together. Yeah.
That's
you're helping me, man. You're helping me. I'm going to have to write this down and give you credit because that was deep.
Nah, man. You dropped some dimes on me, boy. I was like, oof. I never thought about that before. So I appreciate the conversation, man. And I thought about this question I was about to ask you, and I was like, yeah, he can handle this.
Okay, here we go.
So I wanted to ask, and before I mention that, it's just time, matter, space, energy, intelligence. What's your take on the phrase or on the term transmutationism?
Oh, wow. I can't say. I would have to ask you for more context because I've heard the phrase before, but I can't say I've like really got it in, like, you know, my mindset, like, okay, well, this is exactly what it means. Because I would just put the words together, transmutate, but I don't know exactly where the context is.
It's I'll put it in the way I've kind of broken it.
Yeah, please.
It's almost like the evolution of oneself, but it's almost the understanding of what you are and what you want to be and how to get there. And transmutation comes in a sense where if you're a person that's limited, you figure out how you find ways to go to be limitless. You know what I mean? If you're a person that's narrow-minded, you find ways to kind of almost encapsulate fragments of being to expand your mind to parameters you've never dreamed of. It's pretty much the evolution of oneself and the process that goes with that, the figuring, the idea behind it. You know what I mean? It's pretty much what transmutationism is about. The evolution of one soul.
Yeah. Obviously that speaks volumes to me when you simply talk about changing from what you were to what you will be, right? Because the very name that I just gave the byline of my podcast is become the creative that God created you to be. So the assumption is from the get-go is that you're not what you're going to be yet.
No.
Right? And so this very much hits a very spiritual place where I go. So I don't know if I could necessarily, I don't want to co-opt the concept by simply saying, oh, it's just like this.
Yeah.
I would never go that. I'm very much a nerd. I like to study things. I like to know the concepts behind things. So I would probably pick up, after we get off, you could send me a book and say, hey, read this book so I can really understand it. But what I understand from what you're saying is... Yeah. It absolutely is a necessity of things to grow.
Yes.
If something's not growing, it's dying. Mm. And in terms of our mental, spiritual, whatever.
That's one. I like that one. Yeah.
Yeah. So me personally, the easiest thing in the world to say me personally, I say this a lot about my own life. Like I don't like the person that I was at my 20s, but I'm glad he was who he was in my 20s, because I never would have learned the lessons that I know now, about to hit my 50th year, having gone through what I went through and learning lessons I learned. And I didn't have the information I needed back then to make a different decision.
Yes.
Of course I didn't. I didn't have the experience then. So I didn't have the informational experience to make a better decision in my 20s when I made a bunch of messes in my personal life, right?
Yeah.
But I'm grateful for that information that I got in my 20s, because now it informs who I am now. Right. So in the biblical sense, if you're going to use like a little verses, or there's a verse that talks about, you know, now we see through a glass darkly, but when all is made apparent, we shall be as he is. So as I look at a perfect example in my case, right? If I use God as my perfect example, well, I'm never going to be God, but I have something. And as I keep looking at that vision of what I can be, I start to change. And it's the whole idea of keeping something out in front of you that you can aspire to. So no, I don't know what I'm going to look like when I'm 70, but I'm going to get an image, right?
Yes.
And as I keep looking at that image, I'm going to keep, it's like all of us end up looking like, you know how they say sometimes with adopted children, they start to look like their parents, even though they're adopted.
Yes. Yeah.
that's what I'm saying. Like I'm saying that somehow or the other, I don't know how it works, but somehow or another, when you have an image of what you're going to be, you start to change it to the image of who you will be. And it's the question is, which image are you looking at? What image, what vision are you having that you will be start to become? And so again, I don't know if I'm using the term correctly or if I'm going in the right direction.
No. You're on the money. You're on the money.
Yeah. So that's where I would say from. Like, I say about music. I say about all these things. I don't want to be the same. I want to have the same kind of principles and the same foundations, but I don't want to be the same, you know, in 20 years, you
that's
know. Yeah. Yeah.
Like,
Exactly. Yeah. So I can definitely resonate with that part.
It's like, you know, they say in the mind, you plant pesticide, it will grow. You plant flowers, it will grow.
Yeah.
Whatever you put in there, it will grow. So I think it starts by making sure it's something that actually benefits you and something that you want to be. Which brings us back to here, where whatever situation you're in, whatever inspires you, whatever you love, whatever is, it's like it's so much intertwined in your being that you can't even do without. I think that is the connection that you're looking for in terms of like making that decision that this is what I want to be. And once you decide that, in my understanding, especially just on the journey I'm on with my artistry, I think the universe, everything just falls into place, you know? So the mind, it starts in the mind. And once you make that decision, things just kind of fall into place around you, because the universe wants you to figure things out, wants you to think, wants you to find out, you know, what is for you, whatever it is. And once you make those requests, you will get them, you will have them. It's just the conviction behind it. Do you want it enough? Do you want it bad enough? Are you willing to prove it? Are you willing to do the work? Because I think the saying goes, you find passion without work, but never work without passion. Something along that line.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It's basically saying that if you're passionate about what you do, there is never a day where you don't feel not to do it. You know?
Yeah.
And so that's the greatest indicator, I think, to something that is for you. You always want to do it. Even on your deathbed, it's like, bring it.
Yeah. So true. No, exactly. You want to turn it off and you can't. Like that's,
but you can't.
Yeah. Definitely part of it. That's definitely part of the passion. And it's interesting that you said that work and passion piece, because there's another book I was reading that talks about how some people push, again, we talked about extremes, right?
Yeah.
Some people just say, oh, well, you only follow your passions and you'll never did work a day in your life. And meanwhile, you know, I'm not passionate about paying my taxes, but I got to do it, right?
Yeah.
So there's this line between, again, sometimes the passion follows the work. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you start something, you don't even know if you're passionate about it, but you say, you know what, I'm just going to put my, and you know, the more you do it, the more you realize you like it. So it's like this, again, this balance of, yes, you're passionate about it, but I didn't want to practice piano when my mom first started me playing. I didn't want to practice. I enjoyed it, but I didn't like it. I didn't love it to the passion that I have now. So my mom had to push me to that piano. And I eventually, the passion developed.
Yes.
Once I hit that, you know, heard that first Miles Davis record, right?
Yes.
But if I had not been pushed in a direction that was opposite of my passion, I never would have found my passion.
You never would have found your passion.
So it is like this balancing again. It's this balancing act, man, of, yeah, like you said, like, you know, you got to want it, but sometimes you don't know what to want.
Don't know what to want.
So you got to just start doing something, like do something. If you don't know what you want, do something.
Experiment, just do something.
Do something, start somewhere, work at something, and then eventually you'll find that, oh, this is something that I want to do, and I wouldn't, you know, you didn't have to pay me to do it. But yeah, it's that thing, like you said, you have to start. You have to like just get the reps in, and then you know, the passion can then drive you when you don't feel like doing it, you know.
Absolutely. You said something that kind of struck a nerve in my head, and I was like to myself, here's a thought. Does logic follow emotion, or emotion follows logic?
Ooh.
Like, which comes first? Mm-hmm. Like, we know the intertwining, but sometimes maybe one's in front of the other. You know, what happens when that's the situation where there's not a, you know, that synchronization of harmonious synchronization? Like, what does that look like?
Now this is one of those chicken and the egg type questions, right? And I'm leaning on something I just heard one of our ministers at our church say. It's the same thing, like, between, okay, which came first? And the way he says it, we'll both need each other.
Both need each other.
The logic needs emotion, and the emotion needs logic. You know, the very definition of, like, a logical statement, I had to do a little bit of this discussions with my kids back when I used to did homeschool them. I used to homeschool my kids, so we did a whole thing on logic.
Yes.
Right? So all these logical statements were all based on if this, then that. If this, then that. Everything was cause and effect, right?
Yeah.
Well, emotion is also an if this, then that, right?
Right.
Cause and effect. It's you said this, I felt this. Mm. And then the question is, why? So now you got to go back to the logic of it. Okay, I felt this, but there was a cause and effect to that, right? There was a reason I felt it. There was a genesis. There was things that, you know, and then there's things in my life. And so you go back over the patterns and you're like, okay, why do I feel the way I feel? And it doesn't mean that everything has a logical explanation. But you see how I'm saying, like, there's a, like absolutely, you said, there's a synergy. Like, absolutely, I have to go back and logically think, okay, how did this emotion even take place in my life? How did I feel? Why did I feel the way I feel? And then if it goes to, like, a logical decision, well, I need to buy a car.
Yes.
Well, what car do you want to buy? Why do you want to buy that car? Well, you might just, I like the color red. I like the color blue. I want to go fast. I like this. I like, well, that's emotion.
That's emotion.
And so the emotion is like, helps you make a decision, when logic is like, any car will do.
There you go.
Well, now it's just emotion. It's like, you know, and we can go as deep as marriage. You can go deep as, you know what I mean? Like, eventually, absolutely, it's like, logic is not going to do by itself. Like, you need some emotion to kind of push you in the right direction to make a decision. That logic by itself, I'm thinking, like, you got me going all the way down the nerd path. Now I'm thinking of Spock. I'm thinking of Star Trek and Spock, right? And the whole, like, the reason why Spock was so interesting to so many people, why? Because he had a human side. Like, he was all
logic.
He had
a human side, yeah.
He had a little human side.
But the logic was leading, but the human side was like, let me at him, Uncle School, let me at him. You know what I mean?
That's crazy. That came up. That was a crazy memory. But yeah, that's the thing. Like, you need a little bit of that emotion, even if you're like a super logical person.
Absolutely.
So yeah, man, I think this is such a great conversation, because it kind of hits that place where this is a individual decision.
Yeah.
Like it's an individual thing. My wife is very much a logical person.
Mm.
She's very, you know, managerial, but she's also a singer. And she likes to say, well, I can't sing jazz because that's so emotional. And I'm a classical singer. I'm like, yeah, honey, look, just sing the song.
Yeah.
The way you want to sing it. And if you sing it kind of like you just talked about, like if you just sing it just like Sarah Vaughan or just like somebody because you like that, that's fine.
Yeah,
the emotion will come from whatever you want it to come from, you know.
Absolutely, man.
So it's so yeah, it's this combination of the two. But yeah, that's I don't know if that helps at all, but that's kind of like how I see it.
Yeah, but it's just yeah, again, I kind of couldn't help myself veer back into that paradoxical situation. It's kind of like the immovable force, the unstoppable force versus the immovable object. What happens next? But I said, I actually mentioned it because I was just like, how would this egg now fits into artistry? You get what I mean? How would that fit? And I think it maybe is just a situation where sometimes, you know, a triggering, something struck a chord. It could be logical, but it could also be emotional. And I think it all comes back to conviction at the end of the day. Are you convicted enough? Are you triggered enough to do something about it? To that flicker that I mentioned earlier on, that could just be you. That could be a matter of conviction. Now, what are you going to do?
Yeah, it has to turn to action. It has to turn to action. Conviction has to turn to action.
Yes.
That's absolutely, I can definitely, that word conviction, I love the fact that you used it, because I've said that about even when I left my ministry position and I left, right? And I tell people a lot of times, I wasn't confident, but I was convicted. I wasn't confident in the decision I made to go back into a world of playing music that I had never really done as a professional, right?
Yeah.
I didn't have all the eggs in the basket. I didn't have a nest egg, none of that, going back into being an artist. But I was convicted, man. I was convicted, like, I cannot stay still. Like, it is time to move. It's a time to take a leap of faith. And look now, 20 years later or 15 years later, whatever, you know, being a full-time musician and also having these podcasts that I'm doing and like getting to live a life of basically a full-time creative, like it was on the other side of that conviction of taking an action. So like you just said, the nudging, right? Whatever you want to call it. If, you know, for me, it was definitely, I feel it was an answer to like a prayer in God, right? So for me, it was that conviction. It was like, nah, you got to move. And you, like that trigger was, in my case, give this resignation letter while they're trying to promote you. It was literally like,
that was me, bro.
That was when the conviction came, like, okay, are you serious? Let's find out.
Yeah.
Let's find out how serious you are. Let's see if you can look right at your comfort zone, because you mentioned that earlier. Another great word, right?
Yeah.
My comfort zone was offered to me. And I had to exchange the comfort zone for the risk of the conviction.
You were forced.
And that led to, right. And that led to the fact that now I can like sing what I can, play what I can, accompany creatives like I can, all these other you know, like that whole world opened up when I traded in my comfort zone. So
it's conviction. You said that because you remember before we started this whole, well, a couple minutes ago.
Yeah.
I remember I said you have a plant pesticides or you plant flower.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds to me like you decided you made a choice and you planted flower.
Yeah, but I didn't know it was a flower, man. I was like, I didn't know what kind of tree it was. I was like, this is insane, you know. But yeah, you're right. Like I believe so much in the concept of seed time and harvest is the phrase that we use a lot. And, you said it, are we planting seeds? I think it was C.S. Lewis that said this again, as some of these great quotes that are coming from other readers and other writers.
Yeah.
But C.S. Lewis said, you know, your choice is either to chop down trees or irrigate deserts.
Ooh.
And I'm choosing to irrigate deserts. Like I'm looking for places where there's no water and I'm trying to get some water in that piece. I'm trying to plant seeds where it looked like there's nothing growing, you know?
That's powerful.
Because those are the only places that need water. If it's got tons of water, you don't need it. Mm-hmm. But it's the dry ground that needs the water.
Yeah.
So maybe I had to go and find some dry ground.
Absolutely.
And plant there and water that, because over here is like, well, this is blooming fine. This is good. But over here, this needs some more water. It needs some more seeds. And so, so that, and again, it's risky. It's scary. It's scary to do that, especially as an artist, right? because you don't have any guarantees.
You don't have any guarantees. That's powerful, man. That's powerful. Okay. I have something. It says, the architect. You're not only the designer of your outcomes in life, but also the builder of bringing it to fruition. It all starts with your belief and it converts from there. Transformationally speaking, however, it all starts with a choice, a flicker, a sense of conviction, if you will, to think and progress, a progression of thought. Only then can you make a decision about what you really want and proceed to be in pursuit of those things that resonate to your frequency so greatly.
Nice.
That's more like my summon of, you know, what we've been speaking about and just the topic in general. Because I, you know, I had a lot of time to think about this, and I was just like,
Yeah, no, I love. I am so thankful again that you made the invitation, because I absolutely, I live kind of off of these conversations. Like I said, this would be if we weren't separated by miles and technology, yeah. Like we could rap about this in the house, and you could be like, you know, talking with like I said, a lot of my poet friends.
Yeah.
And we would literally be doing the same thing till 3 o'clock in the morning.
Man,
just talk about life and poetry and creativity and how we're evolving as people. Like that's my sweet spot. That's why you probably have to kick me off the interview, because that's my sweet spot, man. That's what that's where, you know, the conversations I think really do transform people. The conversations transform people. It's not just you by yourself, things you're coming up with. It's combination of the community that eventually say, oh, you know what? I can be better. I got something different I can try. I want to try this thing. I want to do this. And it's like, and then people behind you like, go for it. That's what it's all about.
That's amazing, man. And of course, it was partly the inspiring thought behind what I do now when it comes to podcasts. That's my laptop to the minute of time. it's part of the inspiration behind what I do for podcasting. Yes, I like to think of it like this. If you think about an athlete or sportsman, you know, all the work is really done in pre-season. You know, it's really done in the winter training and all that malarkey. When you see them at the start line, that's really just to show off, really.
It's the final product. Like everything else has been done. Yeah, man. It's so true.
And so, you know, when I think about this, it's like when somebody share their work with you, it's really the final product. These conversations are really what makes us grow. You know? Makes the flower that we turn into, you know.
100%, man.
And it's so important. It's so important. I don't know. Thank you so much for coming through, man. I don't even want to end this interview. Where is this? That.
Yeah. Right. No. It has to be a part two.
It's just like, man. So much to touch on, but.
Yeah, I'd be glad to come back, man, and just continue this conversation again, even if it's offline. It's just about absolutely, connecting with, man. Other that's the kinship I feel with your brother, so I appreciate you having me on.
It's been great, man. Thanks so much for giving me your time. And of course, you know, in the future we have to do this again, you know.
Absolutely. Yeah,
man. But it's been a pleasure. Thanks so much.
My pleasure. Take care, sir.
Thank you.
Mind over matter. Overcompensating. Overstatements. Crookedness relating. The soul's churn in return. Mental overstimulation. One word. Riveting. It tethers my pilot. Streams that are promised. Make seeking less.